Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, our Bankruptcy Lawyers Debt Relief Agencies edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 8, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Milovitz v. United States. The questions in this case were, 1. Whether an attorney who provides bankruptcy assistance to an assisted person in return for consideration and who does not fall within one of the 5 exceptions is a debt relief agency for the purposes of 11 U.S.C. 101-12a. 2. Whether 11 U.S.C. 526-A4 violates the First Amendment. And 3. Whether 11 U.S.C. 528-A and B2 violate the First Amendment. In a 9-0 decision delivered by Justice Sotomayor, the court held 3 things. 1. Attorneys who provide bankruptcy assistance to assisted persons are debt relief agencies for the purposes of Section 101-12A. 2. Section 526-A4 prohibits a debt relief agency only from advising a debtor to incur more debt because the debtor is filing for bankruptcy rather than for a valid purpose, and thus does not violate the First Amendment. And 3. Section 528's disclosure requirements A and B2 are reasonably related to the government's interest in preventing the deception of consumers and thus are constitutional as applied to Milovitz. Justice Scalia joined the opinion of the court except for footnote 3. He also filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. Justice Thomas joined the opinion of the court except for part 3C. He also filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. To discuss the case, we have Marie Griffin, who is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Center for Legal Policy. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Griffin.
Milovitz v. United States was filed by a Minnesota bankruptcy attorney to enjoin the enforcement of certain provisions of a 2005 federal law known as the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act. The act prohibits so-called debt relief agencies from advising their clients to incur additional debt in contemplation of filing for bankruptcy. Attorneys who represent clients in bankruptcy proceedings are arguably covered by the law, violations of which can expose lawyers to civil actions for actual damages and attorney's fees, both by their clients and by state law enforcement officers. The law also requires so-called debt relief agencies to identify themselves as such in consumer advertisements and to make other required disclosures. Milovitz raised 3 main issues. First, are bankruptcy lawyers, quote-unquote, debt relief agencies within the meaning of the statute? Second, if so, does the statute's provision prohibiting debt relief agencies from advising clients to incur additional debt in contemplation of bankruptcy violate the First Amendment rights of bankruptcy lawyers? And third, do the Act's required disclosure provisions violate bankruptcy attorneys' First Amendment right to refrain from speaking? The district court improvidently reached the constitutional questions by approaching the case backwards. It first determined that the challenged provisions of the Act would surely violate the First Amendment rights of lawyers, and only then concluded that the Act as written did not apply to lawyers. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously reversed the district court on the issue of whether lawyers are covered by the challenged law. It held that the plain text of the statute unambiguously includes bankruptcy lawyers in the group identified as debt relief agencies. On the constitutional questions, the court reached a split decision. It upheld the Act's provisions requiring bankruptcy lawyers to make various disclosures to current and prospective clients, but struck down the provision on advice to incur additional debt in contemplation of bankruptcy as a violation of the First Amendment. The Supreme Court's decision in Milovitz, released on March 8th of this year, held that the Act did not apply to bankruptcy lawyers, and that both of its challenged provisions passed constitutional muster. Justice Sotomayor authored the court's opinion, in which she was joined by 6 of her 8 colleagues. Justices Scalia and Thomas issued separate opinions, concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. With respect to the threshold question, whether bankruptcy lawyers are covered by the challenge statute, it's not surprising that both the Eighth Circuit panel and the Supreme Court unanimously found that they were. Indeed, the only perplexing question is how the district court could possibly have found otherwise. By its terms, the statute covers persons who, quote, appear in a case or legal proceeding on behalf of another, or who provide legal representation with respect to a case or proceeding. Not only do lawyers routinely do these things for their bankruptcy clients, but it isn't even legal for anyone else to do them. So the statute clearly applied to bankruptcy lawyers. In fact, Justice Scalia issued a concurring opinion in this case for the sole purpose of complaining about a fleeting reference to the legislative history of the Act in a footnote of the majority opinion. Scalia emphasized that when the text of a statute is clear, the court ought to entirely refrain from analyzing legislative history, because delving in at all in such cases only encourages wasteful litigation while reducing legal certainty. On the constitutionality of the disclosures required by the Act, the court upheld them by applying the so-called Zouderer standard. Zouderer is a very forgiving rule under which required disclosures in the commercial speech context will be upheld as long as they are not unduly burdensome and as long as they are reasonably related to the government's interest in preventing the deception of consumers. While the court was clearly correct to uphold the Act's disclosures under such a forgiving standard, Justice Thomas devoted his concurrence to arguing that Zouderer was wrongly decided in the sense that it improperly differentiates between the right to speak one's mind under the First Amendment and the correlative right to remain silent. In an appropriate future case, Thomas might hope to persuade his colleagues to overturn Zouderer, but the majority opinion in Milovitz certainly offered no indication that the current court has any appetite for doing so. On the final issue, whether the provision prohibiting bankruptcy lawyers and others from advising their clients to incur additional debt in contemplation of bankruptcy, the court chose to interpret the statute narrowly to prohibit only advice to load up on debt in anticipation of having it discharged by the bankruptcy court, advice that is already prohibited by the model rules of professional conduct, which prescribe advice to engage in illegal or fraudulent conduct. The American Bar Association filed an amicus brief in this case, vociferously objecting to what they considered a regulation of the attorney-client relationship that directly conflicted with the requirements of state ethical codes. But the ABA would only have been right about the presence of such a conflict if the court had adopted a broader reading of the challenged provision limiting advice to clients. Because the court interpreted the Act's limitation to be coextensive with existing state law standards governing the ethical conduct of lawyers, conflict is no longer a concern. This doesn't mean, of course, that it's good policy for Congress to enact duplicative measures to prescribe attorney conduct already regulated by the states. It would perhaps even be nice if some provision of the Constitution prevented such duplication of effort and resources, but sadly this is not the case, and the court wisely refrained from introducing public policy considerations into its analysis of this question. Overall, I think given the current state of First Amendment law, the court got this opinion about right. There are certainly some statutes so vague that judicial clarification amounts to judicial lawmaking. The Federal Honest Services Fraud Law comes to mind. But this Act is not one of those. And interpreting the Act's provisions narrowly, the court engaged in prudent constitutional avoidance.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.